We acknowledge the traditional custodians of the unceded lands this podcast is recorded from, the Yugambeh and Cammeraygal peoples.
We pay our respects to the elders of past and present and celebrate the diversity of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples and their ongoing cultures and connection to country.
You're listening to the Mum's Gone Climbing podcast.
We're on a mission to deliver high-quality climbing and adventure resources to badass climbing mamas.
And redefine motherhood one episode at a time.
With incredible guests.
Very bad humour.
And just enough Kleenex moments to keep things interesting.
So grab yourself a cuppa or plug us in on the way to the crag.
As we bring you the latest beta from the Mum's Gone Climbing crew.
Hello, welcome to the Mum's Gone Climbing podcast. I am Nell Gow and I'll be your host for today's podcast along with the amazing Eva Rosenbaum. And we're going to have back on the podcast the beautiful Erin Gilpin. Erin is a mixed Métis, Filipina and Celtic educator, filmmaker, rock climber and mama. She is also the founder of Indigenous Women Climb. Now, if you're wondering why it's all about Nell and my voice at the moment, it's because Eva has been swept up in the storm that is life and motherhood, and she couldn't make it for this intro, which is really sad because banter is no good when you just have one person. So we're going to keep this short and sweet. A huge shout out to our sponsors for this episode and series four, Urban Climb and Climbing Anchors. If you don't know who these guys are, we absolutely love them. Urban Climb have gyms around Australia. They've got three in Brisbane at Milton, West End and Newstead. They have one up in Townsville and they have two in Victoria at Blackburn and Collingwood. We absolutely adore these guys. They have the most beautiful communities at their gym with a whole range of different courses, a whole range of different meetup groups, including Mum's Gone Climbing. So go and check them out. And for February, they have their Spin to Win. It's for casuals, which I know so many of you mamas are. And you go in there and they've got a little wheel on their counter and you get to spin it. You might get a free entry or something else cool. It's kind of like Wheel of Fortune for climbers, as Eva said in our last episode. So go and check it out. Our other sponsor, Climbing Anchors. Absolutely love these guys. They are your go-to for climbing and outdoor adventure gear. They have shops in New South Wales, in Alexandria, and mini stores in Nine Degrees at Lane Cove and Waterloo. They also have a store in Victoria in Fitzroy. And because they're such legends, they've given us a exclusive Mum's Gone Climbing code that gives you 12.5% off everything in the store except for sale items. You can just go in there and get whatever you want online. The code is 20MGC24. You can also get this when you're going to the store. You've just got to mention to the people at the counter that you've got the MGC code, give them the code, and you get your 12.5% off, which is absolutely amazing. We also have a bit of a favor to ask. If you haven't already, can you jump onto Spotify or Apple if you're loving this podcast? Please go give us a star rating. 5 stars would be amazing. Or a review. I think you can do the reviews on Apple, but maybe not on Spotify. If you could do that, that would be so damn fantastic because it helps us reach a bigger audience. It helps people know that, you know, we have awesome conversations here that are super fun. And we just love hearing from you guys, whether you want to shoot us a message, comment on an Instagram post, or pop up a star rating. It's all just like this wonderful goodness of magic and glitter that I guess gives us motivation to keep going with these conversations and carving out time when we can to, you know, make space for mums who climb and mums who want to get out on an adventure. So it's really important we get that feedback from you. We absolutely love it. And I hope it gives you a sense of connection as well. Now, on to this episode with Erin. It's another really special one. If you haven't listened to part one of this conversation, please do jump on. It's episode 37. This one is episode 38. And that'll give you kind of like a bit more context into the conversation we're about to jump into. In this conversation, we talk more about how important climbing is for Erin from the perspective of her connection with land and place. It's kind of like an integral part of the way that she relates to cultural teachings. And for me, and I think Eva put it really lovely in the conversation we were having, she kind of offers these bits of the puzzle of why climbing might be so important to all of us, why it speaks to our hearts so much. So I think there was some really big value in her perspective and what it could mean for all of us as humans and the way that we relate to the planet. One of the other things that we spoke about, which really has become more important to me since our conversation with Erin, because we had this conversation quite a while ago, it was back in 2023, probably mid-2023, to be honest. And she talks about how valuable it can be to get educated on the traditional place names of the places that you're climbing. And that's a really good starting point to then to learn more about the cultural teachings of the area. But just that first step of going out to a new crag that you might be going to, but taking the time to learn about the geography from an Indigenous standpoint. And I guess it's spoken to me a lot because of my desire to have more knowledge about Australian Indigenous people, Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islanders, and starting to learn more about what this land that we live on, what we know as Australia, was like when you look at geography and mapping from before colonization, and really getting to know that this wasn't just one nation called Australia. It was many, many nations, and there was laws and there was culture and there was so much that belonged to the land and that was informed by the land. And so it's really brought a new depth into my understanding of where I live and where I recreate. And it's only the tip of the iceberg, I guess, what I've been able to discover, but it really has changed my perspective about the land that I reside on. And I'd really encourage any of you who are interested to go and delve into this, because there's lots of information out there. And we'll share a bit on our Instagram and Facebook on those sorts of things. So, yeah, we really hope you enjoy this episode with Erin. We've got some really cool show notes with different books that she mentions, like her father's book, which looks absolutely gorgeous. I really want to get my hands on a copy. And a few other things that she mentions. So check out the show notes. I hope you love the conversation. Enjoy.
I guess on that note, and I guess I've just kind of had like a little bit of a brain spark of like, okay, we could talk about it and we could be honest and we can share our experiences, but wouldn't it be really awesome if the narrative changed so much that it became the norm, and that when new women came into this, they were like, hell yeah, I'm going to go through an initiation and I'm going to come out and it's going to be all different. But with that in mind, I'm also going to like possibly steer us, I'm hopefully along the same path, but sort of in a different direction, and talk a little bit more about you, Erin, and this idea as of land as body, because this is really big for you. And I also feel like this could inform so much of what we're talking about as well. As you said, you've been in the academic world for quite a while, and you've actually got your doctorate. You had a dissertation that you did called Land as Body, Indigenous Women's Leadership, Land-Based Wellness, and Embodied Governance. This seems to be like one of the founding kind of principles in your own life. So can you talk to us a little bit about that, and then kind of like how that integrates with everything in your life? And I don't know if I've just injected this into this conversation incorrectly, but
no?
Okay, fantastic. I'll let you take the stage.
Oh my goodness. I'm like, how do I even think? I'm like, oh, right. Again, I look back at that time and who I was when I had the, you know, like, I mean, the privilege to speak to so many strong and beautiful Indigenous women, and most of them, looking back, were our mothers. And I remember, like, one of the interview questions, because the research was really looking at the interconnections of experiences of personal wellness and how personal wellness informs how we engage with relationship and or governance, and so leadership or like outward relationships in the world, and how those experiences are informed by or inform how we relate to the land or how we relate to our planet. So health and wellness, which in our research we defined as Pema Tisuin. And then we looked at relationship and governance and kind of those pieces, the political kind of sphere. And that was what we defined as Hokotoin. And then we looked at relationship to land. And we asked questions and kind of explored different ways in which people thought about and experienced those different experiences in their life. And I look back and I'm like, oh, wow, like, I was so young when I did that work, because I really, it was like doing research on the moon and never having been there. And now I've been to the moon and now I'm looking at that research that I did when I had never been.
It's like, that is such a great analogy. What? I love it.
Oh,
I
my
love
God. It. So one of the things that people kept saying when I would ask them, you know, what are some of the things that you need to feel wellness or to experience wellness? And consistently people would say a good night's sleep. And also knowing when everyone in my life is safe, that's when I can then be well. And like that, those are the two most determining experiences of my life and of my wellness right now, is like, one is a good night's sleep. And two is, if I know that all of my people are safe and they're like, they're where they need to be, then I remember myself. And then I'm like, oh, okay, what are you going to eat? When are you going to drink water? What are you going to do? Like, what do you have to do? Like, and so that's kind of the world that I'm in right now. And it's teaching me a lot, because if I were to think about those questions at the time that I did that research, or engaged with those questions, I would say, oh, you know, wellness is when I've had times to journal and do yoga and, you know, go for a paddle or something, you know, things that I just don't really, unless I strategically make time, it's not as integrated in my life anymore. And because I was like in my young 20s and I wasn't a parent and I was, you know, and so I look back at that research and I kind of look back at who I was in that research and I feel light years away. So I look back at it with a lot of tenderness and a lot of, you know, gratitude for the individuals that, you know, their teachings and their thoughts and all those different pieces in that work. But it really is about, you know, everything that I try to do in my life and try, you know, think about is really about our relationship to our planet. And creating spaces and educational opportunities where Indigenous knowledge and natural law is valued in terms of how we think about governance across our socioeconomic and political spheres, economic spheres, so that we can reorient and reposition ourselves as humans to better align with natural teachings and ways of being of our planet. I think that we as a species, as humans, are called to live in alignment with our planet. It's not like a floofy or fluffy thing, and it's being projected as such. It's actually very grounded and very dignified, intellectual, theoretical, cosmological, well thought through, practiced, sound, well researched knowledge, both quantitative and qualitative, that has been encapsulated in Indigenous knowledges and governance systems for thousands of years. And so it is clear that our planet is experiencing the crises of our imposed economic systems, the values that are perpetrated in those systems, which include the values that I totally need to grapple within myself on a daily basis, because I exist in these systems, and that's competition and greed and merit and self-interest and, you know, trying to find who you are as a person in that world and who you are as a mom in that world, where, you know, all I want to do, my perfect world is honestly just being a mummy. Like, I just want to be, I want to be with, present with my, babies. And like, we're required to stretch so far and so deeply to, you know, to make money, to provide, to ensure that they have an education, to think about investing, to learn about investing, to think about retirement plans, to like tap in so deeply to these systems that we, it takes us away from hours and hours of being together on the land, which is where that's where our knowledge comes from as a people. Like that belongs to us as people. And that's, I think, where climbing has been so, so significant and sacred for me and my family, is like, because we're hours and hours outside together in our bodies, and it feels like feels like stolen time or like a luxury, because we got to get back and we got to show up and we got to do these things. And so I'm really trying to grapple with, you know, the systems that we live in, and ultimately remember that we are the land. Our bodies are extensions of the lands that we come from and that we return to. Like, how we enact governance on the body, on the land, sorry, teaches us how to enact governance on our bodies, how to talk about consent and our bodies as women and queer and, you know, non-binary people who are raising young, vibrant humans as well. Like, these, the land teaches us consent. The land teaches us relationship. The land teaches us reciprocity. It teaches us protocols. It teaches us, you can pick berries, that we're in berry season right now. And that's all we want to do is pick berries. And so, but there's thorns that you need to navigate. So you need to be mindful. You need to be slow. If I'm teaching my toddler, my two-year-old, how to pick berries, she knows how to do it in a way that's careful and cautious and respectful. And I teach her, you know, when we take something, what we leave in return. And we may do that culturally through tobacco. We may do that through, you know, our hair. There's ways that we're taught to do that so that we're, you know, practicing reciprocity with the land. And I think I'm so attached to like sci-fi and fantasy, because I'm reading about these worlds that, you know, I'm like, I fit way more into these worlds where I'm like cruising around with people who are half rock or something, you know. Like, shout out to my favorite books, and I'm always talking about these books. I put them in my dissertation, to be honest, and I'll share with them afterwards. But N.K. Jemisin, and she wrote a series called the Broken Earth series, and it's just like amazing. It's amazing sci-fi fantasy, but it really is about how we're projecting ourselves into futures and recognizing the ability and the power and the agency that we do have now to inform the next seven generations. And that's what my people have done. I come from people who orient themselves, who have tried to orient themselves as best as they can for the next seven generations. And I think we, as all peoples, are called to do that. That's a sacred responsibility, knowing the love that I have for my daughter and like the world and the planet that I'm leaving for her. Like, that love is the same love that I want her to experience if she were to have children. Like, that's generational love. Like, and I'm learning so deeply in becoming a parent, like what those teachings actually are. I wouldn't know in my body those teachings until becoming a parent, you know. And so it clarifies things are clear. It's very clear, you know, what we are called to do out of love for our children and for their children and seven generations from now. And those are stories of dignity and of hope and of beauty and of balance. And I choose to believe in those stories as opposed to all of the zombie and apocalyptic stories that are fed to us on TV consistently. If we continue to just feed those stories into our psyches and our shared psyches, that's what we will create. So how do we return to the land so that we can tap into those stories that are meant to carry us forward? And that's really what I think that being in relationship to the land is about. And that is that is what climbing is and can be for me. Yeah. It's you know, it's funny because you're like, how is climbing that? But it's just your body on the land. That's how we remember that. That's how, you know, if we're not outside and we're not on the land, and it doesn't need to be romantic or it doesn't need to be grandeur moments. It's just knowing, like telling yourself, this is where my body belongs. You're safe. And letting the land parent you, like the land, man, our planet loves us, and our planet like deserves more and deserves better. And that's how I really hope to think about like education and filmmaking and this type of work, is like, what are the stories that that we value, you know?
Well, you've successfully got me and Eva both crying now.
So. I will sit here and just cry for hours if you.
I think it's because what you're talking about is something that's so deep for all of us. And I think it's something I've been thinking about a lot in the last couple of months, of how broken the system is. And like you said, you're always, even when you do go out and you have those times, or, you know, when we have quiet times with our family, there's always that, but we have to get back. We have to do this. We have to get back to work. We have to get back to this treadmill that humanity has created in so many ways. The other thing that I love that you mentioned, and I'm not sure, as you know, if that's relating to me more as a Caucasian middle-class woman, of that idea that, you know, that people who go out into nature or who, you know, sit and commune with nature, they've kind of been more like those floofy hippies. Do you know what I mean? And that's what we're fed. And you're like, well, hang on, I don't really relate to that. So then does that mean I don't relate to grounding myself in nature? But it's bullshit. That's not true. And I think that's a narrative problem again, that I just think really needs to be examined. And I think turning to the Indigenous peoples of the lands is an incredible way to examine that, because as you said, there's thousands of years. It's already there. Like, it's already there.
It's all the things all at once. Like I've said consistently, I'm like, I feel like my life has exploded into like 1,000 pieces of light. And it's so pretty. And here I am just looking at it all, and life's flying by, you know, and I'm just slowly putting it back together, but not sure how to put things back together. I'm like, I'll try this. No, this doesn't work. Okay, well, I'll try this. And it's such a unique experience. And I mean, yeah, I really am curious to see the ways in which the stories told about climbing and about relationship to our planet will change over time. And, you know, something that I think about a lot is my dad wrote a book called Tidal. It's a story for global hope, and it's for young people. It's like, my parents saw me as a young person experience, like, I went through a time in my life, I experienced quite consistent panic attacks due to what I, you know, people now call climate anxiety. And so as a young, you know, person engaging in climate activism and trying to figure out, you know, cultural teachings and accountabilities that we have to our planet, and then just like the scale and scope and speed of everything being so overwhelming, I had panic attacks as a younger person. And that's where I had to really kind of stop and say, well, I'm pretty useless, like laying on my kitchen floor hyperventilating right now, when what I really want to do is take care of people in my life so that we can take care of each other and, you know, like take care of this planet in a way that is, you know, dignified. And so I think my parents and my dad has seen, you know, the impacts of the climate crisis on young people. So it kind of just came to him. Like, he says that he just channeled it through like this story of five youth around the world who are essentially called into this big like crazy experience, the world and the tectonic plates start shifting, and it's this massive like planetary experience, and there's these five youth who are in all these different places in the world, and they're kind of brought together to do this specific type of work and dreaming work and ceremonial work and lead humanity into a new future that's grounded in leadership from young people. And it's this beautiful, pure story. And it's something that's been really inspiring. And so I'm like spending some time right now with a friend, and he's teaching me how to write for screen. He's this beautiful filmmaker, and I'm kind of just thinking about, you know, now the power of stories and like how, you know, insanely pervasive stories are through film, whether it's, you know, a healthy thing or not. And so I'm trying to apply my sci-fi fantasy mind to what that could look like in film one day. And like, maybe one day we could work towards building, you know, stories for our young people where they see themselves and they feel independent of where they come from and who they belong to. They feel that embodied experience of pulling and belonging to the land. And because the land is our first parent, and the land is, you know, has been teaching me parenting in ways that I've never thought possible, especially around like fear of the unknown. My husband's from Brazil, and we spent, when my little one was 6 months, went to Brazil for 6 months. We're working towards being able to raise her, knowing her homelands in Brazil and her people and her family in Brazil and also here. But it's really scary for me. It's like terrifying. I don't know the lands there. Everything to me has fangs. Everything to me is scary. My little baby, like, I just need her safe. You know, I think about it all the time. And I had to really learn like the practice of letting go and trusting my husband's knowledge in the lands that he was raised in. I mean, as a kid, like, we're not too far. I mean, times have changed, but like, I was a kid who was kicked out of the house in the morning, came home for supper. Like, our only rule was we had to be sprayed off before we could come inside with the hose. My sister and I were just here, and we would just be outside all day, every day. My husband was the same. Like, we were literally outside on the land all day, every day, in summer when we were not in school. And I look back and I'm like, how did my parents trust us at that age just to be out there? And I believe that the land was parenting us as a co-parent, like, the, you know, and that, I don't mean to sound like romantic, and of course stuff could have happened and stuff, but like, we, like, there's way more unseen. I'm not going to talk too much about this, but some of my teachings are around unseen as well. And like, we're not sharing this planet just with what we see. There's really, you know, powerful opportunities for us to think about the land and the agency and autonomy and sovereignty of the land outside of ourselves as well. Like, we've tricked ourselves into thinking we don't need it because we live inside, you know, we can live inside systems where we don't need to depend on the land. But the moment that the power cuts, we know, we're like, oh shit, like, what are we gonna do? You know, like, oh, thank God, my phone's back on. Like, I do it every day that happens. I'm like, I would be screwed. Like, I've got no backup plan. My traditional knowledge is like, I don't have it, you know, like food, sovereignty, all this stuff, you know, you're like, oh my God, we're on top of everything. Where do you learn that? So it's like at a systems level though, I think have created the illusion that we are independent from the land as opposed to being interdependent and interconnected with our planet. And I don't know where the shifts are going to happen, but I definitely can feel a part of larger communities who feel that pull of, you know, deeper belonging and kinship, and therefore responsibility and accountability to the planet that we come from. And if there's ways in which our climbing practice can ignite and support and offer healing for us so that we can continue to do the work that we're doing in the worlds that we live in, then I want to climb with you.
I love it. Then I want to climb with you.
Let's have babies climb. And then climbing is also just climbing. Climbing just helps you tune everything out, right? Like, climbing is also, you know, like, this is where myself and many others in my world exist at all levels of time, like in parenting, in relationship, in our work. Like, this is, we're thinking about cosmology. We're thinking about, you know, these types of pieces. And then, so climbing is a place where you can just kind of simplify and reconnect with yourself and all of that as well. And so, I mean, I'm really grateful for that, even though I feel very right now alone and kind of like blindfolded in that world, but it's there, it's there. And see, meeting you both and being in a space like this reminds me and tells me that it's there. And it makes me not want to give up, I guess, too, because I do want to give up sometimes. I'm like, maybe I, like a couple weeks, I'm like, maybe I have to stop. Like, maybe I can't do it anymore. Maybe there's seasons of it. Maybe I'll come back in 10 years or something.
Which I suppose is not actually stopping, right? Like, it's never going to leave you. Listening to you speak and how passionate you are about the land and your connection to the land and your ancestors, and then hearing you speak about climbing, like, it's like this perfect marriage. Like, I've found myself a few times in the last sort of hour and a half wanting to say, like, do you think it was intentional that you, like, found climbing? Was it this crazy coincidence? Because it just seems to be this perfect blend of passion for you. Like, they just seem to go hand in hand. I don't think that's ever going to leave you, no matter how distant you feel from it at a certain point.
Thank you for saying that.
I really mean it. And it's beautiful for us to witness, right? Because it in some way then affirms, you know, our relationship with climbing. And sometimes I think, my God, like, we've got this community and this podcast and we talk about parenting and climbing and they're just, we're so passionate about it being hand in hand. And I think some people must be like, what? Like, surely, how does climbing come into this? But it does for all of us. And you've just articulated in a way that I don't know that we've heard it necessarily in that way before. There's this, you've demonstrated this link. You know, I feel like you've articulated what I haven't been able to, in terms of passion and how important it is. It's never going to leave you, Erin.
No, I think that's a really good point to make, Eva. And I guess that's that whole idea of, you know, I guess, Erin, when you talk about coming into climbing, particularly in the beginning, always climbing with people who, I guess, you saw them climbing and you saw the way they were climbing and the way that they were relating to place and land, and it didn't feel right to you. And you then went seeking other Indigenous or Native people to be like, hey, how do we navigate this within our own belief system? Which is so beautiful. And I think also just so valuable for all of us, you know, particularly for you because of your own person, but for all of us to question what we're doing. This was one of the questions that I wanted to talk to you about, because I'm not sure if it's because of where I am in the space and I like to keep my eye on different things going on in the community, or whether this is actually something that's going on, but there seems to be more discussions surrounding climbing and other forms of outdoor recreation and their impact on Indigenous people, on sacred lands, and on cultural practices. But, like, in Australia at least, it's quite a sensitive and complex topic, and it's probably just avoiding online conversations is, like, a really good way to start to not feel absolutely, horrible about the whole situation. But, you know, Indigenous international relations is very important to you, and like, what would you like, do you have your own vision of how you'd love to see these spaces navigated, and what do you want non-Indigenous climbers to know about Indigenous land and place-based knowledge systems and protocols and governance practices that exist in relation, like, to the outdoors? Like, what do you wish we all knew that we quite clearly do not?
Yeah. Oh my goodness. I mean, for myself as well, right? Like, where does the learning begin? And, you know, when my partner eventually moved up here, up north, I'm currently situated and live on the Wasanich territories, and the city of Victoria, BC is also located on the territories of the Kasepsum and Songhees nations as well. And so when he came here, I drew him a map of like some of the places I wanted to take him. And but I called it a decolonial map tour, and I learned the like the proper place names of all of these places, and then, you know, which are very well known in the city with their like English and or colonially given names. And so we did this little like tour, and it really in that time like kind of changed how I think about mapping and geography as well. Like, how do I when I think about Australia, or like if I look up Australia on a map, you know, what we see are like the cities, but how, what would that look like through Indigenous land eyes, right? Like what are the true names of these places? Because oftentimes the names of places inform you something about that place, and it's therefore teaching you something about how to be in relationship to that place. And so I think in climbing, because we're often seeking different crags in different places, and our travels are, you know, incited by wanting to climb, there's really practical and like tangible opportunities for us to kind of challenge how we think about space and land and mapping, and just learn about, you know, prior to this city that has been here for however many years, there have been, you know, civilizations here. So who are like, what territories are these? Like, what are the true names of these places? You know, language comes from land. Like language comes from the different places that, you know, it, the language lives in. And so place names and saying the place names is very important, and it's important for the land to hear it as well. And at a basic level, it's helpful to think about wherever you go in the world, you know, what are the true names of those places, educating ourselves in turn. And that is it. That's a interrogates colonization, that like disrupts it in our own minds. And you don't have to do anything, but what you're doing is you're saying this the colonial history of the existence of this place or city isn't the infinite. It's not all and end all. It hasn't always been there and will always be there in perpetuity. Like, there's worldviews and civilizations and people that extend beyond that. And it kind of situates colonization at the periphery for a minute. It's not just the anchor of our entire worlds and what we perceive as real and reality and how life works. It's kind of saying, actually, let's just use our imaginations for a second and teach ourselves about, you know, the names of these places. And maybe eventually you can learn about what cultural practices belong to these places, what protocols belong to these places, you know. And it's a really beautiful opportunity to think about positioning ourselves on Indigenous lands wherever we may be. And thinking about, you know, there's cultural knowledge that informs how many nations steward and care for and protect the land. So how, if I'm living here, how am I advocating and or supporting local nationhood? What does that look like for me and my family? And I mean, they're just conversations to have at the kitchen table. You know, they're conversations to think about, you know, having a beer at the end of a climbing session. You know, they're beautiful conversations. They're beautiful learning opportunities. And so I think that there's just many opportunities for that. And in terms of like where I hope to see the climbing world and just like all of our communities who care for and value relationship to our planet in whatever capacity, I'm excited to kind of press into some more storytelling around that. So I don't know what that's going to mean. I'm just learning how to do film stuff. I never thought I'd be in film stuff, but my husband's a filmmaker, and a lot of my work was just looking for funding so we could actually do work together. But now I'm like fully in it. So I'm like, oh, well, now that I'm literally doing self-taught film stuff on the side, like maybe we could think about, you know, using our imaginations in new and different ways. And so, I mean, having a two-year-old's the best way to practice your imagination, because she very much wants stories all the time. So I don't know what's gonna, you know, what these next 5 to 10 years will look like and how we think about ourselves in the story of what climbing is, but hopefully we can just add more and more and more layers to it so we can bring our full selves, you know, into what we do. I mean, for someone like me who like is a mixed person, there's a stretching that happens when you are of mixed identity, I think, at least for myself and some people in my family. It's sometimes hard to, you know, you have the experiences of not being enough, of not being this enough, of not being that enough, of being too much of this, of being too much of that. And, you're just kind of stretched at all times. And so climbing and reenacting moments of stillness or of just, you know, quiet and being with the land, and that's what climbing can provide. You know, it just silences all these different pieces of ourselves that we have to be in the world, and you can just kind of tune into like, who are you? Like, who are you, Aaron? What's coming up for you? What is that fear? What is that reaction? What is that emotion? What is that resistance? Or, you know, the experiences of flow or the experiences of triumph or self-love or pride or celebration, like just pureness of experience of being, you know, human on the land. Like, it is really precious, that, and that's something that climbing really does do. I hope my daughter experiences those, you know, those moments one day in her life. She may not, I mean, we'll see, but I mean, it also, there's a magic there that I just hope can always be present for, not get too taken from capitalism and too taken from the industry and like how cool climbing is becoming and how like the gear that you need to climb. Like, I just hope still, like, eventually when all that noise settles down, because I think it has to, it's growing in perpetually, like social media and like just all of these things are, it's just loud. And I don't know if there's a breaking point or what, but the land's going to be there at the end of the day, at the end of whatever day that is that we as humans are putting ourselves on. And I just know what story I want to be a part of for those next seven generations is not a long time. Like, I know the names of my ancestors 7 generations ago, and my next 7 generations are going to know my name. Like, we're connected to each other, you know, and they're going to want to know how we're positioning ourselves right now in our lives, and we owe it to them. We as Indigenous peoples and as mixed peoples, we're future based peoples. And I think that climbing can be a way for us to, for all of us to think about, you know, what that means for us and our families too.
I'm a bit speechless.
I was like, I'll leave some space, see if Eva's got something to say. But
I just feel like, I am genuinely speechless, because I feel like you have this sentiment and this energy and this knowingness about you that I feel like we get a little bit of a glimpse into it just by having this talk with you. You know, I wish I could say I knew the name of 7 generations ago in my family. You know, like I wish I could mirror that level of connection. And so I feel like it's a gift hearing you talk about it. Yeah, I think this whole conversation's been a gift.
I'm curious, Eva, like, because I actually don't either, and I don't think it's the cultural norm for, well, not in my, I guess, cultural norm to know that. I mean, but does this inspire you to know, Eva?
Oh, like endlessly. Like that's what I mean, right, by saying that I feel like we've had this glimpse into probably all these things that, my God, I wish I could. I hope to get more of that in my life. You know what I mean? Like, I've listened to you talk about feeling stretched and feeling like, you know, you've stretched between different peoples and different communities. And you know, my family are Jewish by background, and I was raised with a Jewish upbringing, and I don't identify as a, you know, a practicing Jew now, and I'm a gay woman. And, you know, a lot of my family, you know, generations gone, were wiped out in the Holocaust. And so there's so much that you've spoken about that, I suppose resonates on lots of different levels, but then on by the same token, I feel like I'm not enough of all those things to be able to relate properly. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's a stupid.
Totally.
It's just, yeah, so much has.
Oh, it's such a common experience that like so many people feel. And I think there's a really beautiful, there's like power. I don't know if power is a word, but there's agency in recognizing that we are now, the moment that we become parents, we've become an ancestor. Like I and we didn't think about it like that, but my husband and I recognized that one day, like one day in the blur of those first 40 days, we were like, oh, like we've become an ancestor. And so I think people yearn for or grieve or search for ancestors in order to understand who we are now. But there are many ways to connect and understand and accept and love and have, you know, like ancestors doesn't mean like they're all great people. Like they're humans who are figuring their shit out at the time that they were existing in, you know, but we in this moment have agency now to think about how we can be a good ancestor for the next generations to come, and focusing on those little ones as sacred beings who deserve to know the land as the land is meant to be known, who deserve to know what it feels like to jump into cool, clean water and to eat berries harvested themselves or whatever it may be, not live in fear of forest fires and, you know, unpredictability of the land, but to know that there's safety and there's connection. Like, how can we focus our minds and our intentions and our prayers to them? And I think it transitions us in a different way. And that's futurism. Like, that's what fantasy and what sci-fi can ask us to do if we use our imaginations and then leaning into that. Like, I think that there's something really beautiful about that. I would be really sad if climbing just turned into something that the elite could access only and gyms were overcrowded and crags were, you know what I mean? Like, there's something very pure about what climbing offers us. And I think exploring what that means for us, like, we don't have to know those things, but like knowing that that's a space that we can kind of also experience in climbing. Man, I got to go climbing this weekend. I got to figure it out. I got to try.
Oh, I love that. I think that's a beautiful way to tie up our conversation. And my gosh, Erin, thank you so much for sharing your perspective and for sharing your story. It's been a very important one for me. So I'm just like so grateful that you've lent us some of your time and had this space. But I also am like, I love all these conversations so much. Where do we go now?
I just feel like this is not the last time we will be seeing each other, and I hope that that's all I'll say.
Absolutely love that.
And then we can cry in person.
Yes.
Yay, perfect timing. Come on. Run over. Come say bye. Get over here. Come say bye.
Oh my gosh. Erin's gorgeous, gorgeous daughter. It's just come.
Hi! What have you got?
What do you mean?
Taco.
These are your
clothes.
Do you like climbing? Are you going to climb with Mommy and Papa this weekend?
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, so awesome.
Thank you so much for your time, for your welcomeness. I mean, it was really healing to be able to have a space to think about these things. So I'm really grateful, and I hope to be in touch.
We will be. And we also need to talk fantasy books, because Eva and I are both fantasy fans.
Yes.
Thank you so much. I'm so grateful.
Thank you, Erin. It was absolutely beautiful.
Thank you so much.
Have a great day.
Bye, lovelies. Have a beautiful evening.
Bye.
Bye.
And that wraps up our wonderful, amazing, beautiful, magical conversations with Erin. It's been such a pleasure having her on the podcast, and she's just brought such light and warmth and perception and depth into our psyches, which is amazing. We'll be back in 2 weeks' time with our final guest of series 4, if you can believe that. That's episodes 39 and 40. And we have the wonderful Amanda Watts. If you've been with us from the start, Amanda was our very first guest. She's a sports dietitian. She's an incredible climber from Australia and a mother. And she's coming onto the podcast to chat to us about age and all of the perceptions and stereotypes and beliefs that we get about getting older, and also about our friendships and how they develop over time. So it's a nice meandering conversation that Eva and I had with Amanda, and we are very much looking forward to sharing it with you. Until then, we hope you get some climbing in, and we'll see you in 2 weeks.